Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. All of the latest J2 and J3 news is coming your way shortly. I'm John Steele. The pod is in three parts this week. In part one, I'm going to give you a quick but hopefully comprehensive review of all of the latest J2 action, so the round 34 games from last weekend and one bonus midweek game. After that, you're going to hear me in conversation with Vivaren Nagasaki superfan, who runs the Vivaren Nagasaki supporters blog, Daniel Kuroda. That's the bulk of this week's pod, a big chat with him about all things Nagasaki. And then to round off, as usual, there's all of the J3 latest with Mike Innes in JTalk Short Corner. So without further ado, let's talk about last weekend's J2 action on the pitch, round 34 of the marathon season. This week we're going to start our roundup at the bottom of the table, and it's FC Ryukyu who are still bottom after a damaging 1-0 defeat at home to Akita. This game was originally scheduled for 6:30 p.m. on Saturday evening, but it was moved up to 1 p.m. in an attempt to avoid the worst of an incoming typhoon. I think that was a good decision, but it was still very wet and windy at that 1 p.m. kickoff. And in front of just 608 spectators, the vital goal came in the 12th minute when Ryota Nakamura headed in a near post corner from Taira Shige. Ryukyu did their best to recover, but found Akita's goalkeeper Yudai Tanaka back to his very best in goal. He saved at point blank range from Takuya Hitomi, and then with about 5 minutes to go, he did brilliantly to palm a long range shot onto the face of the crossbar. In between those two saves, there was an almighty goal-mouth scramble where Tanaka and his defenders did well to keep the ball out. Eventually it was just about cleared off the goal line, and it finished Ryukyu 0, Akita 1. Akita now 16th and a full 9 points clear of the relegation zone. Ryukyu still a point adrift at the bottom and now without any wins in any of their last three matches. Second bottom Iwate are really struggling too, and they went down to a fifth straight defeat on Saturday, losing 4-1 away at 8th placed Yamagata. Iwate actually shocked the home fans by taking the lead in the 7th minute. New Brazilian forward Cristiano, on his first start for the club, heading in Taisuke Nakamura's corner. But Yamagata were level in the 20th minute when Yudai Konishi's inviting first-time cross was headed in by Akira Disaro for 1-1. There was a critical moment in the 35th minute as Iwate goalscorer Cristiano was sent off for a ridiculous two-footed tackle near the touchline. Definitely a red card, and it might even be an extended ban coming his way. That put Iwate in big trouble, and with just 10 men, they went behind 3 minutes later, Disaro crossing low into the box for Thiago Alves to score. Yamagata had plenty of chances to add to their lead, and they eventually made it 3-1 midway through the second half when De La Torre's header from a corner was saved. Kosuke Yamazaki tucked away the rebound, and that made the game safe. After that, Konishi went close to adding a fourth goal with a chip, and Ryonosuke Kabayama headed against the crossbar before a late fourth goal did come from Disaro. He dispossessed Tsubasa Yuge, and then advanced into the penalty area and confidently spanked the ball past Taishi Brandon Nozawa for his second goal of the game. So final score, Yamagata 4, Iwate 1. Yamagata 3 points outside the playoff zone, but they have a game in hand on all of the teams who are in the top six at the moment. Iwate, yes, second bottom and struggling for form, but still just a point behind third bottom Omiya. Speaking of Omiya, they were also beaten on the road in round 34, 1-0 away at Kumamoto. The vital goal in this game came 13 minutes from full time when Koki Sakamoto slipped the ball through for Toshiki Takahashi to fire in his 12th goal of the season from around the penalty spot. A very nicely worked and a well taken goal. Both sides had had chances before that though. Early on in the first half, Seiya Nakano missed the target from close range for Omiya, and close to half time, Omiya's keeper Ko Shimura made a superb close range save from Takahashi. Shimura reacted just in time to push the ball out for a corner via the post. Nakano had another good chance to put the visitors in front right at the start of the second period, but shot straight at Kumamoto goalie Yuya Sato. And yep, the game finished Kumamoto 1, Omiya nil, Omiya's second straight defeat, and it keeps them, yes, 1 point above the relegation zone in 20th. Kumamoto are in 5th, and that's their 5th straight home win, and they haven't even conceded a goal in any of those 5 wins. So finally, it seems like Kumamoto have got their home form sorted out. Gunma were the only side in the bottom 4 to pick up any points last weekend, and they did it in very dramatic fashion, drawing 1-1 away at Tochigi in the Kita Kanto derby thanks to a 97th minute penalty, which turned out to be the very last kick of the game. The home side started well at Tochigi Green Stadium, and Gunma's keeper Masatoshi Kushibiki did well to keep out a header from Ko Miyazaki, but Tochigi did hit the front in the 25th minute. Miyazaki and Kōki Oshima kept the ball alive in the penalty area after a high cross from the Tochigi left, and the ball eventually dropped to Evergreen striker Kisho Yano, who controlled the ball, set himself, and then fired into the top corner. An excellent finish from him. Tochigi had chances to add to their lead in the second half, but they couldn't get the ball past Kushibiki for a second time, and Gunma's goalkeeper was then involved in that last-gasp equaliser. Gunma had a free kick about 30 yards from goal in the 94th minute, and Kushibiki, the goalkeeper, was waved forward as an extra attacker. The ball dropped to him in the penalty area, and he put in a shot that hit the arm of Toshiki Mori for a handball and a penalty. That was converted by Hajime Hosogai for 1-1, and the final whistle was blown straight after that penalty went in. So it finished Tochigi 1, Gunma 1. Tochigi are 15th, level on points with Akita, that's 9 clear of the relegation zone. Gunma are 19th, they're level on points with Omiya, but just a goal ahead of the Squirrels on goal difference. So tight down at the bottom of the table. Now, one place above Gunma, but 5 points better off, are Renofa Yamaguchi, who produced a superb fight back to draw 3-3 at home to the league leaders, Yokohama FC. Yokohama had an early scare when Yamaguchi's Masakazu Yoshioka hit the crossbar in the first half, but the away side were 1-0 up at the interval thanks to a Kōki Ogawa goal. He squeezed the ball in at Kentaro Seki's near post after Takuya Wada had cut the ball back to him from the byline. That was in the 32nd minute. So 1-0 to Yokohama at half-time. But Yamaguchi, to give them credit, went straight after Yokohama FC following the restart. They put the visitors under all kinds of pressure that led to a corner and a gift of an equalising goal in the 53rd minute. Yokohama defender Takumi Nakamura dithered in possession in the right-back position, and then decided at the last minute to fire a very heavy back pass to goalkeeper Sven Brodersen. The startled German could only nudge the ball straight to the onrushing Hikaru Naraoka, who scored his first ever J-League goal, and probably the easiest he will ever score. So 1-1 in the 53rd minute, but Yokohama were back in front from the penalty spot. Just 8 minutes later, Sho Ito's cross hit the hand of Yamaguchi centre-back Hirofumi Watanabe for a penalty, which Ito scored emphatically, and it was 3-1 to the visitors just 2 minutes after that. Ryoya Yamashita played in Ogawa for a delightful first-time chip over the onrushing goalkeeper Seki, a 20th goal of an incredible season for Ogawa. Yamaguchi always keep going until the end though, and they pulled a goal back with 9 minutes left on the clock. Yokohama couldn't deal with a deep cross from the Yamaguchi right, and although it seemed there might have been a handball from an attacker to block a headed clearance, the ball dropped for Tsubasa Umeki to rifle past Brodersen for 3-2. And then in the 86th minute, the home supporters could celebrate a thrilling equaliser, as Yokohama FC again couldn't clear their lines from a right-wing cross, and the ball eventually found its way to the feet of Naraoka, who grabbed his second goal of the game from close range to make it 3-3. So yeah, final score, Yamaguchi 3, Yokohama FC 3. Stirring stuff from the home side, who are not out of relegation danger just yet, but were able to celebrate a precious and hard-earned point. Yokohama far from convincing at times in this game, but they're still top of the table and 7 points clear of third place. Other teams at the top suffered setbacks in round 34 as well. Second place Niigata lost 1-0 at home to playoff chasing Oita, with Hiroto Nakagawa scoring a first half winner. Oita seemed to have the measure of a rather subdued looking Niigata in the first half, and they nearly scored in the opening minutes after a mistake from Niigata centre-back Thomas Deng. He was caught in possession by Nakagawa, who tried to chip the ball over goalkeeper Ryosuke Kojima. Kojima, who was outside his penalty area, did well to just get his head onto the ball to avert disaster. Oita did go in front in the 19th minute though. Asahi Masuyama's left-wing cross was probably intended for Brazilian target man Samuel, but yes, Nakagawa arrived behind Samuel unmarked to send a flying header past Kojima for 1-0. Niigata huffed and puffed to get back into the match after that, but Oita held firm, and yes, the final score was Niigata 0, Oita 1. Niigata now just 5 points clear of Okayama in the automatic promotion places, whereas Oita, who moved up to 5th after this result but are now in 6th, have played their way firmly into playoff contention. Sendai's recent woes continued as they lost 2-1 at home to Mito. This was their 4th defeat in a row, and it led to the sacking of their manager Masato Hanasaki on Tuesday. His replacement has already been announced. It's the former Kofu and Iwata boss Akira Ito, and his orders for the rest of the season might be to just make sure that Sendai hold on to their playoff place. They're in 4th at the moment. In this game, Mito signalled their intent in just the 3rd minute with defender Takumi Kusumoto heading against the post. But Mito did go ahead on the half hour. Kenshin Takagishi picked out Fumiya Sugiura on the edge of the Sendai box, and he had plenty of time and space to finish coolly into the bottom corner. Sendai though came out swinging at the start of the second half, and Mito needed some big saves from their goalkeeper Rui Yamaguchi to preserve their lead. He made a fantastic point-blank save from a Kim Taehyun header, and then saw Ryang Yonggi back in the side after a long absence make a real mess of the follow-up. Yamaguchi then took off to his right to palm a free kick from Motohiko Nakajima against the face of the crossbar, another excellent save. And then Mito doubled their lead 16 minutes from full time in fairly controversial circumstances. A mishit shot from Yoshitaki Suzuki fell to the feet of Kodai Dohi about 12 yards out. He looked like he might have been offside, but anyway, he fired through Sendai goalkeeper Yuma Obata's legs to make it 2-0. Sendai did pull a goal back from the penalty spot in the 83rd minute after a handball from Mito defender Koki Gotoda, and Masato Nakayama expertly converted the penalty. But Mito were able to hold on for a very impressive win. It finished Sendai 1, Mito 2. That result leaves Sendai just a point ahead of 5th place Kumamoto. And yes, new boss Akira Ito's first game in charge is going to be a crunch match on Saturday as Sendai go to Oita. Third placed Okayama were the only side in the top 4 to pick up 3 points in round 34. They won 2-0 at home against Machida, who are currently 9th. Okayama seem to have real momentum at the moment, don't they? And they took the lead in the 5th minute. A long throw from Shuhei Tokumoto led to Yosuke Kawai putting in a fierce shot from about 25 yards. Machida's goalkeeper Koki Fukui did well to palm the ball onto the post, but the ball ran loose for Yudai Tanaka to fire in from close range. After that opening goal, Machida had their chances, but it was Okayama who nearly extended their lead before the break. Mitch Duke hit the crossbar with a header, and then Thiago Alves cracked a left-footed thunderbolt against the woodwork as well, but it was 1-0 at half-time. Okayama sealed their win in the 54th minute when Duke teed up Kodai Sano, who shot from about 20 yards, took a deflection past Fukui on its way into the bottom corner. The final score, Okayama 2, Machida 0. That's 3 straight wins and 3 straight clean sheets for Okayama, who, as mentioned, are 5 points behind second place Niigata, whereas Machida are still in playoff contention, but they're 3 points adrift of the top 6 at the moment. In other matches, Kanazawa won for the first time in absolutely ages, 2-1 at home to Tokyo Verdy. Kanazawa took the lead in the 27th minute when Yohei Toyoda got on the end of a deep left-wing cross from Yuto Nagamine. Toyoda's shot was weak, but in very wet conditions, the ball squirmed out of Verdy goalkeeper Matias' hands and over the line for 1-0. It was almost 2-0 just moments later, but Toyoda's strike partner Masamichi Hayashi saw his header come back off the post after his initial effort had been saved. And then Verdi managed to pull level around the hour mark. A flowing passing move led to Ryo Nishitani putting in a shot that was parried by Kanazawa keeper Yuto Shirai, but straight into the path of the onrushing Ryoga Sato, who fired in to make it 1-1. Parity only lasted for 5 minutes though, as Kanagawa retook the lead after a mistake from Verdi midfielder Koki Morita. He passed straight to Kanazawa sub Kyohei Sugiura, who'd only just come on, and he teed up Hayashi for a low finish into the bottom corner. Late on, Shirai made an absolutely brilliant save from Seiya Baba as Kanazawa switched off completely from a Verdi free kick, and that was enough to protect the 3 points. It finished Kanazawa 2, Tokyo Verdi 1. This was a third straight defeat for 14th place Tokyo Verdi, who can surely forget about the playoffs for another season and start rebuilding for next year. For Kanazawa, a very important win to help with their relegation worries. Tokushima scored twice in the first half to beat Kofu 2-0 at home. Tokushima went in front in the 19th minute when Koki Sugimori latched onto a fine through ball from Shunto Kodama and confidently stroked the ball past Kohei Kawata. Tokushima's second goal was even better, a right-footed curler from the edge of the penalty area from Kazuki Nishiya 5 minutes before the break. Special mention too for Nishiya's incredible two-tone mullet, black at the top with a sort of frosted blonde edge. I think 80s wrestling might want its hair back at some point, but a fantastic goal all the same. So Tokushima 2, Kofu 0 at full time. Tokushima are 5 points off the playoffs in 10th. They couldn't make a late run into the top six, could they? We'll wait to see. Kofu's season, on the other hand, looks over now as they are 10 points adrift of the top six. Nagasaki returned from their 3-week COVID-enforced break with a very welcome 1-0 win away at Jeff Chiba, with Ken Tokara scoring the winner 11 minutes into the second half after some excellent close control from new Brazilian attacker Clayson down the Nagasaki right. He released Tokara with a through ball that put the striker 1-on-1 with Jeff keeper Shota Arai. Tokara finished coolly and it was 1-0. In the first half, before that goal, Keita Buanica and Thiago de Leonso had gone fairly close for Jeff, and early on in the second half, Thiago de Leonso had also wasted a pretty decent chance firing over the crossbar when he should have hit the target. Nagasaki survived a very late and optimistic handball appeal from Jeff's Tommy Omiki and held on for the 3 points. It finished Jeff Chiba 0, Nagasaki 1. And it was announced later in the week that Jeff Chiba's manager, Yoon Jong-kwan, he'll be leaving the club at the end of the season. I think his contract runs out and it's not going to be renewed. So yes, I think that they'll be, not for the first time, rebuilding from scratch for next season. But the final score in this game, Jeff Chiba 0, Nagasaki 1. And staying with Nagasaki, we've covered all of the round 34 action from last weekend, but on Tuesday night, they played their rearranged round 32 game away at Kanazawa, and it turned out to be a J2 classic. It finished 3-3 after Nagasaki had been 3-0 up. In heavy rain, the visitors were 1-0 up at half-time, thanks to a 27th-minute goal from Haruki Shirai, only a second J-League appearance for the rookie, and he got his first goal. A corner from Hijiri Kato ended up dropping to Shirai at the far post, and he was able to sweep the ball past Yuto Shirai in the Kanazawa goal for 1-0. So, Nagasaki had the lead at half-time. 10 minutes into the second period, Nagasaki's Takashi Sawada had a fantastic 60 seconds of action. He made a block inside the 6-yard box to protect his side's lead, and then seconds later at the other end, he made it 2-0 himself, scoring from about 12 yards after the impressive, again, Clayson cut the ball back to him. And just 2 minutes after that second goal, Clayson himself added Nagasaki's third with a brilliant strike. A stylish passing move on the edge of the box ended with Ken Tokara's backheel pass and Clayson's fine finish. So, really, really good goal for him. And, looked like the game was up with Nagasaki 3-0 ahead. On 60 minutes, Kanazawa boss Masaaki Yanagishita made a quadruple substitution, and one of these incoming players, Yohei Toyoda, fired into the side netting when he should have hit the target, and then Daisuke Matsumoto headed the ball against the post for Kanazawa, as it looked like Nagasaki were going to cruise to victory. But things suddenly changed in the 79th minute. Another substitute, Shion Niwa, traded passes with Toyoda and raced into the penalty area. His shot was heavily deflected off Nagasaki defender Kazuki Kushibiki and looped over their goalkeeper Masaya Tomizawa and into the net for 3-1. And less than 60 seconds later, Tomizawa was unfortunate when Hiroya Matsumoto put in a shot from just inside the penalty area. The ball hit the base of the post but rolled along the goal line, hit Tomizawa's diving body and ended up in the back of the net for 3-2. So whether that's Matsumoto's goal, as the J-League website would have it, or an own goal, it's largely irrelevant. It was suddenly 3-2. And Kanazawa completed an incredible comeback in the 88th minute. Daisuke Matsumoto this time, heading down a corner into the six-yard box. And with perfect timing, who else but Yohei Toyoda arrived to nod the ball past Tomizawa and make it 3-3. Amazing stuff. And Kanazawa could even have won it at the end. Tomizawa had to make a superb flying save from another Toyoda header from a corner before full time. But after a breathless second half, yes, the final score was Kanazawa 3, Nagasaki 3. Kanazawa are now 15th in the table and a full 10 points clear of the relegation zone. You sense that James and Victor might be finding it a bit easier to get off to sleep at night at the moment. For Nagasaki, they're in 7th, just a point outside the playoff places and still with a game in hand. All right, I think that's all of the weekend and midweek action covered then, so please stay tuned. In a moment, you're going to hear me deep in conversation with Daniel Kurada, and part two is a bit of a Nagasaki special, so stay tuned for that. It's coming up next. Welcome back, everyone. John Steele here again, and I'm joined for the next section with a very special guest. It's Daniel Kuroda. Now, he's not a first-time guest on JTET, but he has appeared before under a different name, Daniel Hartman. So, Daniel, nice to talk to you again. How are you doing?
I'm very good, John. Thanks for having me. And, yeah, nice to be called a very special guest. And, yeah. In case someone doesn't recognize me, I am the one behind the Nagasapo, so Vifaren Nagasaki supporters account in English on Twitter. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. The reason for the name change, Daniel, it's not to avoid any kind of heavy tax bill or, you know, any part of an FBI sting operation. You're married now, that's right, isn't it? So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, for the other things like tax and stuff, I have a... another few identities.
Yeah, no, that's good. Well, you've created another, like a different Skype account than last time for our chat tonight. So I'm going to keep an eye on you. If you've got another Skype account next time we speak, that'll be three different accounts for three pod appearances. That will set the alarm bells, the alarm bells ringing, I think. But yeah, no, just kidding. But yeah, Daniel, good to talk to you again. My friend, and when we, as you mentioned, you're our go-to guy for FIFA and Nagasaki news and opinions. So, without further ado, the listeners have heard me do my best to catch people up on events at Nagasaki in part one. So they had this narrow but maybe just about deserved 1-0 win away at Jeff Chiba at the weekend, and then the Tuesday night game at Kanazawa, kind of very difficult for me to round that one up because it finished 3-3 and it was pretty chaotic. And it's been a busy month or so at Nagasaki with the kind of COVID outbreak and games being postponed and lots going on. So, where do you want to start?
Yeah, so with the Jeff game, I have to say that, first of all, I didn't know what to expect from this game because... with the COVID break, and it was quite serious at Wiesbaden, because at one point there were 5 days in a row where there were announcements from the club that there had been new infections among staff and players. So I wasn't sure how I don't know, even the team had a quite long break. I wasn't sure how much it had affected the squad, like if anyone had a serious, it was seriously ill, or if everybody was even available, because also we don't get these specific information from most J-League teams. And yeah, so I was relatively unsure, and I also have to say that, yeah, I miss the Jeff United that was there when I started to watch the J League, because that was the 2018 season. I'm not sure. Do you know what was their goal difference?
I think that they have the worst defense, like worst, like most goals conceded, maybe one of the worst.
Yes, but their goal difference was zero. They had scored 72 and conceded 72.
The good old days.
Yes, and they finished 14th. But I think since then they have, yeah, they have turned it, around quite a lot, and now they are not really a team I'm looking forward to. Especially the away games, or generally, I'm not looking forward to the games against Jeff. They are quite solid defensively and quite physical, I think. And they have also beaten Nagasaki every now and then in the past couple of seasons. So, yeah, then when Vifaren's starting 11 came out, so most of the key players were there. And it was really exciting because Claesson was going to make his debut, the Brazilian attacking midfielder who they signed during the summer window. But then there were two big surprises because the central defense was made of Haruki Shirai and Shuta Kikuchi, and they are like Shirai is only 21 and he is a special designated player who came from Hosei University. And Shuta Kikuchi came on loan from Shimizu for this season. So these players had never made an appearance for the club. They never even were on the bench, as far as I remember. And now they were in the starting 11 against Jeff. So that was quite, it was just really surprising. And even though Yusei Egawa, who is usually like, he's the best defender on the squad, he was only on the bench. And also Kazuki Kujibiki was on the bench. So yeah, that was quite a surprise. But I think it was also because Vifaren have conceded so many goals from crosses and set pieces. And these two young guys, Shirai and Kikuchi, are quite, like, they are the tallest defenders on the team now, apart from Kaike, who is injured. And yeah, it worked out really well. So I was quite happy with the performance defensively, which I also, yeah, maybe in retrospect have to say is also because Jeff have quite some trouble offensively. Like they are just lacking creativity. Most of their chances just come from crosses and how do you say that in English? like a loose ball sort of, you know, inside the box, that there is a deflected shot or something, and then someone picks it up and takes a shot from close distance. They get so many, but they don't have like, you know, they are not very strong on the wing. They are not very strong through the center. Their best goal scorer is a defender. And so, yeah, maybe I was a bit too positive about this defensive performance.
I think they did well to restrict Jeff to a bare minimum of chances. I think they were a couple of snapshots from Keita Buenico and then Thiago de Leonso, who I really like as a player, but he's not a particularly deadly finisher. He's quite wild in terms of shooting accuracy. Thiago, certainly of the Thiagos in J2 this season, I think there are three, aren't there? A couple of Thiago Alveses and Thiago de Leonso. He's perhaps the one who needs the most work, most shooting practice. I just thought maybe, Daniel, there was a kind of handball incident right at the very end. I don't know if so, one of the Nagasaki players potentially sort of handling the ball when they were on the ground, and Tommy Omiki on the Jeff side was appealing for a penalty. But were you worried at that moment, or do you think maybe there was nothing in that incident?
I cannot remember this moment.
Oh, okay.
I must have missed that one.
That's okay.
I can't even remember it now.
That's okay. Well, don't worry. Arsene Wenger probably wouldn't have seen it either. But yeah, I think to be honest, it was right at the end of the game, right at the end of injury time. Yeah. So I think Jeff probably realised they were desperate, and they were appealing for anything. But yeah, I didn't think it was a handball either. And yeah, how about, I guess we'll talk more about him in a moment, but Claesson, I think he did really well to set up the goal for Ken Tokara.
Yes, exactly. And that was quite an important moment for the team, because one thing that has been that Nagasaki have been lacking is like some creativity also through the center, you know, under the old manager, Hiroshi Matsuda. They were playing in 4-4-2 with two strikers and two like sort of central defensive midfielders most of the time. And now under the new manager, Fabio Carille, they are playing with a 4-2-3-1. And now Claesson has come in, so I don't know if you know this, but Claesson was a player for Fabio Carille in 2017. And they won together the Brazilian Serie A with Corinthians. So I think this is why Carille decided to pick him up now, because he was without a club. And yes, and basically I said it to you earlier that Claesson seems to be what we were hoping Luan was going to be when we signed him. So he is very good with the ball, and he just makes good decisions, and it's also just nice to watch him play. And yeah, you could see it in this moment, like he took on two players in midfield, dribbled through them, and then sent this lovely left, I think it was a left-footed pass, even with his weaker foot, I think, towards Tokura. And yeah, it's one of those goals where it feels like 50% of the goal goes to the guy who gave the assist. It was really nice and really important for the team, and I was very happy about this. I mean, as I said, I'm not too confident when it goes against Jeff these days. So picking up a 1-0 was a really good away win. I didn't expect it before. I would have been totally fine with the draw, to be honest. And yeah, with Jeff, I have to say that the game in general it was also, as I said, it was expected that it was going to be a very hard-fought game. Like, Jeff did so well in shutting down the Nagasaki's wingers. So Cristiano was a complete no-show in this game. Also, Sawada barely had any. I think he had a decent shot in the first half, but that was it actually. So yeah, it really took this one moment of brilliance, I guess, from Claesson to open it up for Tokuda.
Yeah, I was impressed with Claesson too. He's got that kind of really, really sort of silky, smooth, close control. I think that, like you said, makes him really good to watch. You know, he did really well to set up the goal for Tokura, I think.
Yeah,
So,
and
oh, go
if I
ahead,
can
yeah.
say, we have these players like for example Cristiano, you know, he has this he is re he can shoot, and he's really quick, of course. But and also Sawada is very, yeah, Sawada is also very, very quick and so on. But like Claesson now is this player on the squad that Nagasaki really have been lacking, who can just sort of do it all, you know, like even in the center of the pitch. He's maybe not a winger. I think he has played on the wing before, but at least so far, he looks to me like he is really someone who can create something through the middle.
Yeah, definitely, definitely an upgrade on Luan, as you mentioned. Yeah, I'm
Points.
sure
But
he'd be.
that's not too difficult. I mean,
Yeah,
I would have been an upgrade on Luan as well.
we call that a faint praise, damning with faint praise. Yeah. Okay, so Daniel, it was a kind of perfect return to action from that COVID outbreak for the team at the weekend. You know, a 1-0 away win. Clean sheet with you know two young defenders and good kind of a cameo or good performance from Claesson as well. On Tuesday night, the game against Kanazawa kind of didn't go as smoothly, I think we can say. And yeah, 3-3 at full time. This was really incredible stuff, wasn't it? What can you tell us about this game?
I mean, if you just look at the game and think it was 3-3 after being up 3-0, it sounds like someone was saying that to me on Twitter that I must be really upset, or yeah. But I was, it was just so many different things that went through my head watching this game, because at first I was totally amazed that Nagasaki went up 3-0. At the same time, I was thinking, that's actually too much. It wasn't that they were maybe the better team at that point. I think it was a deserved lead at halftime. But when they scored the second and third goal, I thought that was too much. I was happy about it anyway, of course. But yeah. And so I was thinking already, okay, we are up 3-0. That's it now. But then I remembered, and I also tweeted this, yeah, we were also up against Ryukyu 2-0 and lost 2-3. And we were up 2-0 against Iwate, and it was a 2-2 in the end. And I was like, oh, it's still half an hour to go. So there's a lot of time for Kanazawa to turn this around. And yeah, they made the right substitutions. And actually, I think the draw was totally deserved in the end. And after it was 3-3, they even had enough chances to score more goals. So it's really awkward to say that, like, at one point I was so happy and I was almost, yeah, I was confident that we were going to win. And 30 minutes later, I was happy we didn't lose the game. So, yeah, but just performance-wise, I think the first half was, it was quite, I think Kanazawa had a better start, and I was so happy to see Yusei Egawa back in the starting 11, because he had some massive challenges in the first half. I think he did really well helping out the other defenders. Kanazawa were looking for Hayashi. I think he's also their best goal scorer. He has 10. They found him a couple of times, but Egawa came to help Shirai on defense. And once it was, I think, Takahashi who he helped out. And I was really happy with that. And yeah, I think from around the 15th, 20th minute, Nagasaki basically took charge of the game. And I thought that it was a deserved lead at halftime. And yes, so then when the second and third goal came, as said, it was a bit too much. At the same time, it was like Kanazawa's defense was quite poor. Like they, on the second goal when Sawada scored, they, you can see it when you watch the game. Like Clayson is near the byline and he passes it back. Like he plays the cutback pass to Sawada, and Sawada was closer to goal, and then he moves out. He moves back towards the penalty spot. And you can just see that there's like confusion between the Kanazawa's defenders. Like one defender stays near goal, near the post, I think, and the other defender doesn't come in to cover Sawada. And then he's so left alone there. He has so much time to receive the ball and just fire at home. And the third goal, I have to say, it was one of the most beautiful ones Nagasaki have scored this season. I really like this one. It was, I think, Clayson, he played the pass from the left towards the edge of the box, and it looked like he was targeting Otake, but Otake was, he like turned around and let the ball through to Tokura, and like this play, kind of half of Kanazawa's defense followed Otake. Like it really tore their defense into shreds, basically. And Tokura received the ball and played like a 1-2, basically, with Clayson. And then Clayson finished it off from the edge of the box. That was really a lovely goal, I have to say. Like, and you could also see that the goalkeeper didn't have any chance. Like, I mean, yeah, the defense didn't look good, but at the same time, I have to say it was pretty nicely executed.
You wonder if maybe having that kind of maybe the players didn't train much or mix together much during the kind of COVID shutdown, but Clayson, that kind of interplay with other players, you know, that we were talking a little bit before we started recording about Cristiano and about how a lot of his good work and his goals tend to be like individual You know, like super goals or one of those. But you could see with Clayson, obviously, he linked up with Tokara for that goal on Saturday. And then there was that back heel that you mentioned from Tokara to set Clayson up for the third goal here. It seems like there's a really good kind of a, I don't think we could call it a partnership between those two, because they're not two strikers playing together necessarily, but the Clayson's link up play with other players in the team has been good already. And I thought it was really good example of a player kind of continuing his run. So he kind of drifted in from the left, like you said, to the kind of central position on the edge of the box and then scored. It's I always like to see players kind of you know, moving across the pitch like that, because I think sometimes players tend to, you know, stick to their own area and you don't see them move into spaces and commit defenders. And I thought, yeah, that was that might be a pretty good contender for a goal of the month, maybe in J2. I know it's early September, so I could be there's a lot of chances for more spectacular goals. But yeah, that was an absolutely fantastic strike. How much do you think the weather played a part in this one, Daniel? Because obviously it's pretty heavy rain more or less from start to finish. I mean, obviously that was the same for both teams, as they say, but is there any sense that maybe as the game wore on and, you know, the pitch got, you know, wetter and wetter, did you think that contributed at all to Nagasaki letting in the three goals late on?
Not so much. I mean, it's okay, it would make a difference if it was something they weren't used to, maybe, you know, but I have to say that, I mean, that's just my impression when I watch J-League, but it's like the whole year around there are so many games that are where are these type of conditions, especially in Nagasaki. I think Stuart once said it on the pod that sometimes in Nagasaki it's either blue sky and sunshine or it's completely pouring down. And yeah, so I really think that it's just part of the game to me. I didn't think that specifically at the goals the rain made so much of a difference, and yeah, I'm not so sure. And overall in the game, I think it's both teams had to play in these conditions, you know, and they are just used to it, I guess. What do you think? Did you think it made a difference for the outcome?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I thought, you know, it's difficult to say. You'd have to watch the teams play the same game again, you know, in the sunshine, I suppose, to compare. And I'm sure they don't want to face each other again straight away. Yeah. But I thought maybe I was thinking maybe about the second goal for Kanazawa, you know, when the ball kind of comes off the base of the post and hits Tommy's Aaron Green. I don't know, maybe. Might just be my impression, but the ball always seems to kind of skid off the turf a little bit more quickly, doesn't it? On a wet pitch. But I think, I'm not sure it affected the outcome of the game too much. I mean, I watched the Yokohama FC game, over the weekend, and they had a kind of similar problem of kind of they scored their third goal after about an hour and it was a bit too early, and then they ended up letting Yamaguchi back into the game at 3-3 in their match. And it was just kind of it just felt like a typical kind of good old J2 match, you know, of like two teams sort of really going for it and then not really being 100% sure how to manage the game as it came to a conclusion. But I suppose 4 points from two away games is pretty satisfactory, isn't it, after such a long break? You're happy with 4 points from those two games?
I actually also wanted to say something more about Kanazawa. I didn't talk about their goals at all, but yeah, it's just that I have to say that, as I said, I felt that it was, even though we went up 3-0, I thought it was completely deserved for them. And I was quite impressed. I mean, I like Kanazawa anyway. Like, one of my first ever J-League games was my first basically Vifada Nagasaki J2 game in Nagasaki was against Kanazawa. So even though we lost that game, I still somehow have a soft spot for Kanazawa, and also because of James and Victor. So I follow Kanazawa also sometimes, and I was quite impressed, like, how they came back. Like, they were absolutely storming at Nagasaki. Like, really, it was, they didn't, like, they were shocked when we scored the third goal, but I think 5 to 10 minutes later, they just started to, like, I don't know, they were firing from all cylinders, basically. Just a second. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
That's okay.
Because they have two Matsumotos. I wanted to show. I mentioned the right one. Hiroya Matsumoto, he also scored. He scored the second goal. Like, he didn't give an assist, but he kind of started the attack for their first goal. Mm. I think he found Shion Niwa. And then Niwa played this nice 1-2 with Toyota, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when Matsumoto scored that goal, the second one, of course, it's also very unlucky for Nagasaki, because it was one of those where the ball hits the post and then the back of the goalkeeper's head or the shoulder, and it goes in. So that's really unlucky. But if when I looked at it again, like, just that he managed to take this shot was also quite impressive. I'm not sure if you remember this, but it was like sort of like he a turnaround through two defenders. I think that was quite some finish as well, I have to admit. So first I was just upset about the goal itself, but it was also a decent shot from him, I have to say.
I always like to see players having the, you know, being ready to take on the responsibility of having a shot. I think,
exactly.
Yeah, for me, any professional footballer, like, once you're inside the penalty area, you should be back in, you know, you should be confident that you're going to hit the target from there, I think. Whereas you often see, this is not such a big problem in the J League now, but it has been in the past. Teams will just pass the ball around, like, forever on the edge of the penalty area because, you know, nobody wants to take the responsibility and have a shot. I think it's getting a lot better now, but I thought that was a really good example of someone being like, well, I've got, you know, half a yard of space to take a shot, so I'm going to take one. And as much as it was a kind of probably frustrating from a Nagasaki point of view, the way that the goal went in, it was almost, you could almost see it as kind of a reward for Matsumoto, kind of having the confidence to try it.
And just in general, it was like, I mean, they created enough chances. You know, I think Toyota, he had one of those chances where he was quite close to goal, and he just misfired it into the side net, and like they created enough chances to really deserve it. And I also have to say that I also made some notes about Matsumoto. Like, he was in general really good. Like, he also had 41 or 46 passes completed and two tackles and both successful. So he overall, like, I really liked his play. And and of course Toyota, he was like the super sub for them. He played only 30 minutes. He took four shots, three of them on target. He had one assist, and of course he scored in the he scored the equalizer. And he only played six passes, but yeah, he completed five of them. So, and I thought that was a very positive performance from him. And I mentioned him specifically not only because of the goal, but at the beginning of the season, when I was still writing my blog, and I was having a conversation with James, and we mentioned also Toyota, because it was like a coming home for him this season, right? He is from Ishikawa, I think.
That's right.
Yeah. So, and I was quite I didn't really know him before, but then I checked about his career, and he has had quite a decent career actually. So. Yeah, and I like to see him play. He is just one of those really strong, physical strikers.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, his goal was the one, you know, the other two goals were unlucky, but the one goal that really made me upset was the third one, because it was a header after a set piece. And it was just like, this goal was coming the whole second half, like, I knew that Vifaren were going to concede a goal from a set piece. It always happens. So it was like, yeah, okay, they have scored two already, but there's still like 10 minutes left or whatever, and they still haven't scored from a set piece. So I was so sure that they were going to get this one. And you can, if you look at this scene, it's just typical that everybody is watching the ball and everybody is standing, and Toyota is the only one moving at the far post. I think he's the one who gets to the ball. So,
yeah, yeah. Toyota, I don't know how to describe this, but he is my sort of, I don't think there's a better J2 striker when the ball is at head height in the 6-yard box. Now, I mean, with his feet, he's okay. And when the ball is dropping into the 6-yard box, like when it's a cross with a high trajectory, he's okay. But when the ball is literally fired like across the face of the goal at about head height, at about, you know, 6 feet, you know, about his height, he is so quick to react. He always seems to find a space to get a header on goal, and it's quite unique. I think it's like Takuma Abe at Ryukyu is like one of my favourite finishers. Terms of like one touch finishing, like I'd back him with his feet. But if I'm playing a ball at head height into the penalty area in J2, I think Toyo does the man I kind of want to be on the end of that, because he always seems to be in the right place at the right time. Daniel, you're from Germany. You're a man of logic. This second goal, I've got one thing that's bugging me, and it's not so important, so we'll only spend a minute on it, but. We've given Hiroya Matsumoto credit for taking the shot. His shot hits the post, so it's off target. Then it rolls across the goal line and hits the goalkeeper, Tomizawa, and goes in. That's an own goal, isn't it?
The moment you started to talk about it, I knew you were going to say this.
Yeah, I didn't prepare you for this one.
I don't have an answer for this. It's something that is so.
The thing is, the stats would say
goal has never happened in my favor.
All right. Okay.
So you know, if my team scores such a goal, then maybe I will complain if this is counted as an. I think I would complain if this is counted as an own goal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Maybe. Yeah. Especially in the J League, where they are so reluctant to, like, make a goal an own goal, like, you know.
I see.
Like, I have seen cases where clearly goals were an own goal, but they were given to a striker or something like this. So I didn't really. I thought this goal was for Matsumoto, but so yes. Was it actually? I didn't check it. To be honest, I didn't check the J League website. Was it counted for? As an own goal, then?
No, it's given to Matsumoto. Yeah,
so
the J League agrees with you.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to take his goal away, and I'm not trying to give an own goal to Tomizawa, who's very unfortunate. But it just seems strange to me that, like, if that ball had hit the outside of the post and gone away, that would be off target. But anyway. Yes,
it is. I mean, I agree. It's technically, I would also say it's an own goal.
Like you said that Nagasaki never get those kind of goals. So like a computer would advise you, well, Nagasaki need to start hitting the post more. That'll be the key to getting more goals.
Yeah, I mean, if it's up to me, they can just start hitting the goal itself more, and not the post. But yeah,
that won't help me with my conundrum. But yeah, point taken. Okay, yeah, I think we've bigged up Kanazawa enough there for James and Victor. That's bit too much praise for them, in my opinion. No, I'm only kidding. I think they're actually a really good team. There are some really good, especially attacking players. I think defensively, as you mentioned, there's some work to do. But I think that could prove to be, I mean, it might turn out to be a big point for Nagasaki at the end of the season, but I think it will definitely be a big point for Kanazawa, because it just gives them that buffer now, because they beat Verdy. At the weekend, you know, and they got the point against Nagasaki. It's kind of put them in a really good position to not have too many relegation worries. I think they're 10 points clear of the relegation zone now. Just more generally, Daniel, I wanted to ask you about Nagasaki, because this is the first time I think we've spoken since Fabio Carile has come in. As the manager. So how's it been going? Yeah, we spoke in April, so obviously quite a few matches have been played since then. Quite a few balls have been kicked. How do you assess the impact that Fabio Carile has had on the squad? And Nagasaki, they're just right on the edge of the playoff zone in seventh, but they've got the game in hand. And what are you expecting from them in the run-in? Nice, easy questions for you there.
Yeah, so I would say that I have to admit that in one sense, nothing has changed, and that is this kind of up and down. That was like also early in the season, it was like we were relatively inconsistent. Like, I'm not sure. Like, my feeling about the team is that they are not, how to say, they are I think Nagasaki are not still not consistent enough to really be a top team, and this hasn't changed under Fabio Carrea. And you could see this. And one thing that has especially gone the wrong way is that they have been giving away leads. Like, as I said earlier, they were up 2-0 against Iwate and Ryukyu, and they only got 1 point out of these two games. And now they led 3-0 in Kanazawa and only got 1 point out of that game. And that is a really big problem. And if I'm not mistaken, all of these three games took place under him. So that was really not at the end of Hiroshi Matsuda's tenure, but it was when Carrea was already there. So that is something they really have to work on. And the thing is that my feeling is not that the team is complacent or anything. It's just that they become too passive when they have these high leads, and they are not doing well, they are not
managing the game.
Exactly. And so on the other hand, what is more positive is just generally the offensive play. I'm really happy, like Edgar Jr., okay, he hasn't played these last two games, but right after Fabio Carrea came in, like, Edgar Jr. just went on a scoring spree. I think he scored 6 goals in 5 games or something in that range, and that was really good to see, because he was just not getting enough. He was not getting the ball enough, and the system didn't work for him enough to get in the places to get chances, you know. He was always working hard, but he was not getting any chances under Hiroshi Matsuda. So I'm kind of, I have kind of a mixed opinion on this, but I also have to say that when we are looking at the future, Fabio Carrea's job will not depend on the end of this season. I don't think they got rid of Matsuda and brought in Carrea with the expectation to be, like, I don't think his contract has a condition that says you have to get promoted this year. Because at the time that he came in, the team was on a, let's say the team was on a, was in good form. I think they were in a playoff spot, of course. But at one point this season, they were 15 points behind the top two already. And yeah, we all know that the playoffs, if you make it to the playoffs, that's, yeah, it is a chance to get promoted, but it's not a very big chance, especially because of the rules in the playoff final. And so I think that regardless of what happens for the rest of the season, he's going to be there next year, and he will have a chance to really, how to say, like, for the rest of the season, he can also get to know the league and the squad fully. I mean, the squad he will know quite well by now already, but I think that the full impact of what he can do, we will only see next season, to be honest.
I think that's fair enough. And go ahead.
I don't want to say that I have completely given up on getting promoted. You know, if we are in the playoffs, we have a chance. And Nagasaki have been, especially in away games, they have been really good. I think right now we are top of the away table. The home games is where we have struggled. So even if we are in the playoffs in sixth place, I think we can go somewhere and get an away win. But it is, of course, it is like, yeah, it's not a, I said it before, it's not a 50-50 chance. If you make it into the playoffs, it's not a 50-50 chance you go to J1, but it's, I don't know, if you're sixth place, it's maybe a 5% chance you make it to J1 in the end, you know. So I'm not counting on that.
Yeah, and it's a little bit.
I'm happy to see that Claesson has come in, and generally the team is a bit younger now. I think that's very needed, because overall the recruitment last winter was, I was not very happy about it, because the team actually got a bit older, or is the same age as last year, and that was with 41-year-old Keiji Tamada. And so, I'm actually, apart from the fact that we can still compete for the playoffs, I'm very much looking forward to the future now. because career, he has done well. As I said, he is a former Serie A champion. He was an assistant coach even when Corinthians won the Copa Libertadores. And with one of his clubs where he went in I think it was Saudi Arabia in Al-Wehda FC. I think it was this one. Oh, no, it was Al-Ittihad. That was the one. So he was in Saudi Arabia twice already. And Al-Ittihad, he also was very successful. I think they improved in his second season from 12th to 3rd or something like this. I'm quite looking forward, and I hope that this... I hope it works out, of course.
This is good. It's good to have so much positivity on JTET, Daniel, because normally it's, you know, it's James worrying about Kanazawa for an hour. So yeah, it's good to have so much positivity. I'm inclined to agree. I think Nagasaki, you know, they have a good manager, as you outlined there. The squad looks pretty good. For me, and a little bit younger. It's been regenerated a little bit, like you said. On the wider kind of, you know, away from the pitch kind of topics, we were talking sort of before recording about the fact that they have good sort of conscientious owners, more or less, in the Takata family and Japanet. And of course, we haven't talked this time about the new stadium, which is coming, you know, very soon. So I think lots to be excited and positive about Nagasaki going forward. And 40 minutes, and we didn't mention Victor Ibarbo once, so that there's that positive as well. And I think looking at the league table, I mean, at the moment you'd have to say the three of the top six places are probably going to be Yokohama, Niigata, and Okayama, right, who've been in good form recently. But now that Sendai have started to struggle, the other three places in the top six look kind of pretty much up for grabs. There's like, you know, seven or eight teams who might still be thinking that a playoff place is within their grasp. And Nagasaki are definitely one of those. So, it's going to be a really, really exciting final kind of, you know, eight match days as we see who can hold their nerve and get into that top six.
Nagasaki also still have a game in hand. So right now we are 1 point behind Oita and 3 points behind Kumamoto. But Nagasaki, I think on 21st September is this the rescheduled game against Tochigi.
Busy month, right? Because that'll be three midweek games.
Exactly, it's like 2020 all over again.
Yeah, you're like Oita this March when they had their midweek games for like 4 weeks in a row. Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. And yeah, wouldn't surprise me at all if Nagasaki were in the top six at the end of the season and in the playoffs. Then we can talk again. And I might recommend that you just like ban you from tweeting during games. You know, just stick to before and after in case you jinx them like you did, on Twitter. Just kidding. Yeah. Okay. Daniel, on that note, maybe we can I'll move you on if that's okay. And I was going to ask you for some help previewing the games coming up this weekend in J2. So round 35. And it's going to be a bumper Saturday because all 11 fixtures are on Saturday, September the 10th this week. That's because there's the exciting full midweek round coming up next Wednesday, September the 14th. So we got round 35 on Saturday, round 36 on Wednesday. It's all getting very exciting. So on Saturday, the majority of the games are at 6 p.m. So leaders Yokohama FC, they're hosting Tochigi from kind of 14th or 15th, I think, in the table. Second place Niigata, they host the bottom club Ryukyu. And another intriguing game is Iwate against Mito. So Iwate really struggling recently. They're second bottom. They have to be targeting the 3 points at home to Mito. Other games at 6 p.m. on Saturday are Kofu against Omiya. Tokyo Verdy hosting Gunma, you know, big games at the bottom for Omiya and Gunma. Machida against Yamaguchi is at 6 p.m. and Jeff Chiba against Kanazawa. There's two sides that we've discussed quite a lot in this part of the pod. There's also a game at 6:30. It's Akita against Tokushima. And then I think 7 p.m. The three games at 7 p.m. are all absolute bangers, aren't they, Daniel? It's Okayama against Yamagata, so that's third hosting eighth. Oita against Sendai, that's sixth hosting fourth. And of course, Sendai will be under new management in the form of Akira Ito for that game. And then, the one that we're going to probably talk about quite a lot here is Nagasaki hosting Kumamoto. So that's a seventh hosting fifth. And that's, of course, two Kyushu teams going head-to-head. I'm not sure if it qualifies as a Kyushu derby, but let's say it does. Daniel, first of all, how about Nagasaki against Kumamoto on Saturday evening? What are you thinking?
Yeah, I'm also wondering if, because I once saw a conversation on Twitter, I think with Sean Carroll and a few others, who were discussing if this is what is a derby and what isn't. The thing is that at least I think from Nagasaki to Kumamoto, even from Isahaya to where the stadium is, to Kumamoto is only about 80 kilometers. So that's like the closest team. Kumamoto is the closest to Nagasaki in all of the J League, in all the three leagues. So if this is not a Kyushu derby, then there is no Kyushu derby for Nagasaki. So I consider it a Kyushu derby anyway. And yeah, I think this is going to be it's a big game because both teams are playing for a playoff spot, obviously, but also because it's such a close distance. And I have read that they expect a really large turnout. So it could be that it's for the second time this season, more than 10,000 people in the stadium. And Kumamoto, mm-hmm. obviously a handful this season. Like, I remember the first game between the two was quite early in the season, and Kumamoto really, like, they got a 2-0 win against Nagasaki, and it was really deserved. So I am a bit worried, actually, also because Kumamoto are another team that is so strong away from home, and Nagasaki are very poor at home. So, yeah, but it should be interesting. I mean, yeah, hopefully we can. That's the kind of thing, isn't it, when you are, like, we are, I think, 16th in the home table. So it's like, yeah, maybe you shouldn't expect so much, but since it's a home game, I do expect something. And I'm a bit unsure, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how Nagasaki cope with the, third game in a week. Obviously, on the one hand, they've had, I think they had a 3-week break, right, coming into the Jeff Chiba game last weekend because of postponements and cancellations.
Basically 2 weekends off, and so 3 weeks. Yeah.
So on one hand, for professional footballers, if you've been, downtime for 3 weeks, you should be able to play three games in the week when you come back. But it's not. That's a bit unrealistic, isn't it? Because we don't know. Like you mentioned earlier, we don't know how. We don't know which players have had COVID, how badly they've been affected, or how much training even the other players who didn't have positive COVID tests have done. So that might be something to think about. I imagine it was quite a tiring game on Tuesday night as well.
Yes, and I think that, I think it's very important, this part, how much were they actually training during these weeks off, because I think that if they are completely off, if they didn't train at all for 1 week, that's a massive setback for professional athletes, I think. If they cannot train together for 1 week or 2 weeks, and I think in the middle of the season, that's a really that's really tough to come back into this shape, because we all know that the season starts, like, they have preseason 6 weeks ahead of the season. And but I think they only really get into shape after the first few games. Because they need the practice, they need the games, and so as I said, I have no real idea how, like, first of all, I don't know who was actually infected and how it affected the training. There wasn't really any any information on that. But yeah, I certainly hope, because that was something I was already complaining about when Hiroshi Matsuda was the manager, was that like they have a big squad, they have enough good players, you know, so just rotate, you know. It cannot be, in my opinion, it shouldn't be that if Edgar Jr. is on the bench and for two straight games, you know, if he's not fit enough to play, then he shouldn't be there. So if he doesn't start on Saturday, then I would be really concerned, actually, what's going on there, to be honest.
I think Kumamoto are an interesting opponent, because on the one hand, they're very good away from home, and even at home, they've managed to get their form together, haven't they? I think they've won five in a row without conceding. So, but hopefully they don't think it's a home game, you know, because it's a short distance to travel.
There should be a nice away support. I wonder if Gary Irvin, right? He is the J League community member, J Talk community
member. Yeah, he's the unelected representative for Ruasa Kumamoto. Yeah, no, maybe
greetings to Gary.
Hope you're doing well, Gary. And if he's not busy watching Star Trek, I'm sure he'll be off to the Transcosmos Stadium at the weekend. But yeah, that sounds like an exciting match. Any other games that you're curious about, Daniel, on the weekend schedule? I thought Oita against Sendai, perhaps, because Oita, you know, they had that impressive win away at Niigata, where they played really well at the weekend. And Sendai, obviously, they've just changed manager, and Akira Ito's not going to have too much time to prepare the team for this game. So what do you think about Oita against Sendai, and are there any other games that you're looking forward to particularly?
Yes, so Oita versus Sendai is, I mean, generally I want to have as many teams from Kyushu in the top six as possible. So if it's possible, then Nagasaki, Oita, and Kumamoto should be there. So I'm really curious about that game. And as you said, like, I think we said it before we started recording as well, that with Sendai, we will only see in a few weeks if it was a good decision or not. Certainly it seems strange at this stage of the season, when they are still in fourth place, to sack the manager. But at the same time, I think I tweeted it yesterday. They had, after 19 games, I think they had 39 points, and now it's 34 games, and since then they have only collected something like 15 points. It was a lot less, definitely. So I think they are just looking at it this way, that if it continues, and now they have obviously lost four games in a row. So I think at Sendai they were looking at it thinking that, yeah, if it continues this way, and it has been going bad for a while, and if it continues this way, we will not even be in the top six. So yeah, maybe I don't want to say that already that, yeah, they made the right decision, but I can understand it, to be honest. Like, it's a courageous decision, but we will see how it turns out. And yeah, they have they are one of those teams that is also, I think they have so many offensive weapons, you know. I mean, I know them from Nagasaki, like Kida, Nagoda, and of course they have Nakayama, and Keiman Togashi is playing the season of his life. So they have these offensive weapons. If they can somehow manage to get it sorted defensively, like just get a bit more solid at the back, I think they can still play a role in the playoffs.
It's
funny. Obviously they also have a very nice stadium and supporters. So that can always make a difference for them as well.
A fantastic place to go and watch a game, I'm sure. I've never actually made it. Haven't made it to Yurtec Stadium yet, but I'm hoping that I will do one of these days. Yeah, I think for Sendai, defensively, it's not as if the individual players are that bad, but they just collectively don't seem to be gelling well together. So if that's something, I mean, Akira Ito, if I remember, his Kofu side were pretty well organized. Defensively, so if he's able to kind of bring some of that kind of organization to the defense, I don't think, you mentioned the forward players, it's not really a personnel issue, is it? They have lots of good players to call on up front, but it's just in defense they have options to choose from, good individual players, but they're just not defending well as a unit. And I think you're right. I think automatic promotion might have, the chance of finishing in the top two is probably gone for Sendai now. But I think Ito's been brought in, and he's been told, please make sure we finish in the top six, because we're in danger of, slipping after being in the sort of playoff places for months. They're in danger of slipping out of the top six altogether.
Yeah, because you also asked for other games.
Sorry, yes, go ahead.
You already mentioned Okayama against Yamagata. So this is obviously now when all these teams like Nagasaki, Kumamoto, and Oita versus Sendai, they are playing against each other. So it's the chance for, teams like Okayama to get even more. And also, of course, for the top two, it's a chance for them to get more distance between themselves and the others. But it's also a chance, like, let's say, Yamagata win against Okayama. That could be also such a huge result for them.
Yamagata will be very motivated after they lost their rearranged game, didn't they? Previous midweek with that Jordy Bice free kick. So it's not long since they played each other.
Yeah. And then one game I'm also looking at, already looking at the following match day, is Machida against Yamaguchi. First of all, I really like Yamaguchi. I have a soft spot for them, and I hope they manage to stay in they stay in J2. It looks quite good for them now, but you never know. And the thing is also Machida, afterwards, I think they play in Kumamoto. So it's also like Machida really need to win this game against Yamaguchi, because then, it's, maybe I'm looking a bit too far ahead, but like, now is really the time where every point is so important. So if you lose against one of the direct competitors for the playoffs, it can make quite a big difference. So Machida will want to win this game against Yamaguchi, because then in Kumamoto is going to be a tough one for them.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Is it okay? Because then on match day 36 next Wednesday, there's finally also another, like, six-pointer in the relegation race, because it's Gunma against UQ. I'm also looking forward to this one.
Go for it. Yes, football for big boys coming up on Wednesday night, I think, that Ryukyu Gunma game. Yeah, I think I'd mention, just to finish off, obviously, Yokohama and Niigata at 6 p.m, they have sort of friendly looking home games, don't they, against Tochigi and Ryukyu respectively. But I think Yokohama and Niigata are the top two, but they obviously had disappointing results last weekend. Yokohama were 3-1 up and only got the draw at Yamaguchi, and Niigata had that quite surprisingly sort of flat performance, losing at home to Oita. I think the key is just how quickly they can bounce back, and it will be the wrong time of the season to go on a kind of winless run, or to lose two games in a row. So I'm really interested to see how Yokohama and Niigata kind of bounce back, if you like, from disappointing results from round 34.
But it also wouldn't be like, I have to say that I have been waiting for it from Niigata, because that's what happened to them the last two seasons. I remember 2020, that was, of course, anyway, such a tough season. But it was Albert Pucci's first season with Niigata, and I think, like, in the final, I think they only won like one of the final 10 games or something like this. And last season, obviously, they were top of the league. They didn't lose until match day, I don't know. They didn't lose the first 10-15 games. But I don't know, where did they end up in? And they were far behind Nagasaki in the end. That's what I know. They were at some point 18 points in front of Nagasaki, and in the end they were 8 points behind us. So I am a bit, I have been waiting for it to happen from Niigata. But at this stage of the season, I also think that, I don't think that they are going to go on a winless run of 10 games now. Okay, there's not 10 games left in the season anyway.
I understand. Yeah. Any Niigata supporters listening, remember, it's Daniel who brought up all the stuff about, 10 game winless runs in previous seasons and running. It wasn't me. I didn't jinx it. But I think that's a good point. Yeah, and I think you sometimes look at the league table, like I've checked the table, you know, daily for months, and you see Yokohama and Niigata being the top two for so long that you kind of almost, in your head, you promote them in advance, you know? But there is still a lot of football to be played, and it could still go wrong. I think Yokohama FC in particular, some of the performances defensively have been less than impressive recently. I'm thinking about the game at Yamaguchi at the weekend and the Omiya match last month, you know, where they let in three goals and didn't look good at all. So, still some work to do for Yokohama and for Niigata. Yeah.
I have to say that if I could pick one that's going to be promoted for sure now, it would be Niigata, because I think it's just time for them. Like, they have this massive stadium, and Yokohama, they have been going up and down, haven't they?
Mm.
So I think Niigata, it would just be refreshing to have them in J1 now. So I mean, probably I think they are both going up in the end. But yeah, for Niigata, I will actually be really happy if they make it now, because of their supporters, and like, they definitely have a like J1 surrounding there. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think that their supporters, you know, consistently put up really big numbers, don't they, at the stadium? They're one of the best supported teams in J2, and I think, like you said, it's time for them to go back up. I also think what I've seen this season, I think Niigata are a better side than Yokohama FC. I know that might sound a little bit off because Yokohama FC picked up more points in the table, but I prefer Niigata's style of play. It's a little bit more kind of aggressive, a little bit more up front, if you like. Yokohama a little bit more reactive, a little bit more content to kind of score and then try and close games out and park the bus a little bit. So I would like to see Niigata rewarded for a bit more of a kind of swashbuckling style they've had this season. And yeah, like you said, I think it looks like they'll both be going up, but it's J2, Daniel, so a lot can happen. A lot can happen in the next 2 months. But yes, I agree with you. I think it would be good to see Niigata back in the big time. But don't tell my son, because he's a big Yokohama FC supporter these days. But okay, Daniel. On that note, I think we'll leave it here, if that's okay. I know your dog's been waiting patiently for a walk, I think, for about three hours.
By now, my wife came home and took him out.
Ah, fantastic! Yes,
but,
okay.
Yeah.
Right,
so we can talk another 1 or 2 hours. But no.
Podcast extras. Well, we need to save some stuff for next time you're on, Daniel.
Yes.
Don't use
and
a ball.
As you always say, it's past your bedtime.
And it's definitely true here. Yes, but pretty much I can sleep anytime. Yes, but we always leave the people wanting more. You know, that's the message. Don't give them too much at once. But Daniel, thanks so much for coming on. It's nice to chat as always, and the in-depth kind of analysis on Nagasaki is really valuable, so I really enjoyed hearing that, and hope the listeners will enjoy that too. So yeah, please come back on again sometime soon, and we can talk again.
Yeah, that would be nice, and thank you so much for the invitation, and yeah, also greetings to all the other guys from the community.
Ah, fantastic. One big happy family. Yes, that's right. Yes, good to hear. Good to hear. Okay, on that note, please stay tuned. In a moment, you're going to be brought up to date with all the J3 news, as always, in J-Talk Short Corner. Magic Mike Innes is on hand with that. But before I hand over to Mike, as always, I'd just like to say thanks for listening to the pod and downloading. And yes, especially if you're a J-Talk patron, we appreciate that support a great deal as well. But that's all from Daniel and me for now. Please stay tuned. Magic Mike Innes and the J3 News is coming up next.
J-Talk Extra Time.
Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode I'll be looking back on the fixtures in round 23, as well as previewing the round 24 matches coming up this weekend. Straight into the action this week, and among the seven games on Saturday the 3rd of September, there were late wins for all three of the main promotion contenders. Leaders Iwaki FC hosted AC Nagano Parseiro, and the visitors gave as good as they got, especially in the first half. In-form striker Hiroki Yamamoto going close on a number of occasions. The only goal of the game, though, came 7 minutes from time. Kaina Tanimura making his way along the edge of the Nagano box, Riku Saga having his shot blocked, and the rebound coming back to Tanimura, who fired inside the post from 12 yards. Final score, Iwaki 1, Nagano 0, and this is why Hiromasa Suguri's Iwaki are top of the table. They have belief, and they keep going until the rewards come. Yuki Stealth's Parseiro are a good competitive team, but for consistency of performance, they don't compare with the division's best. Kagoshima United remain 4 points behind Iwaki after another scrapped-out win, this time at Azul Claro Numazu. The only goal here came 13 minutes from time, Atsuki Satsukawa swinging in a corner and Kenta Hirose pushing it back across the face of goal for substitute Yuto Kide to stab in. The game concluded with the unexpected sight of Kagoshima's Rei Yonezawa being sent off, evidently deemed to have harangued the referee over a foul by Azul Claro defender Terukazu Shinozaki. Hashtag only in the J-League. Final score, Numazu 0, Kagoshima 1. Azul Claro lacking the attacking prowess to cause the visitors serious problems. Kagoshima needing to bounce back after the 4-3 home loss to Imabari. Defender Kenya Onodera, by the way, after last week's nightmare, was nowhere near the squad for this game. The third of the main contenders are Matsumoto Yamaga, who left it very late to claim victory at home to Ehime FC. The Lukao Aoyumu Yokoyama partnership looks set to serve them well in the run-in. It was Yokoyama who put Matsumoto ahead with 5 minutes to go in the first half. A delicious flick that wrong-footed defender Daisei Suzuki and sent Ryo Toyama's cross inside the far post. 10 goals for the season now for the 19-year-old. Ehime did pull level shortly after the restart. Asahi Yada floating in a free kick, the home defence failing to get it clear, and Shuma Mihara reacting quickly to volley it in at the far post. Both sides needed maximum points from this one, Ehime still clinging on to hopes of promotion themselves, but in the last minute of the 90, Matsumoto's Takuma Hamasaki sent it across to the near post, where Itsuki Enomoto beat Reya Morishita to it and glanced a header past Kenta Tokushige. Final score, Matsumoto 2, Ehime 1. Hiroshi Nanami's side remain level on points with Kagoshima. Ehime now 9 points off the pace with 11 to play. Compared with the mighty Mikans, things are a little more favourable for Katane Toyama. They're fourth in the table, 5 points behind Matsumoto after a home win over Fukushima United. Katane were 3-0 up inside half an hour, taking the lead in the 6th minute when Fukushima's Makoto Kawanishi played an ill-advised crossfield pass, easily intercepted by Yuma Matsumoto, whose first-time ball set up shorter Kawanishi for a comfortable finish. The same player made it 2-0 with another right-foot shot after Fukushima's ill-at-ease back line were unable to deal with Katari's high press. And 2 minutes later, a simple long ball down the Toyama left freed up Naoto Ando, who outran Uheiji Uehata and centred for Musashi Oyama to score his first pro goal. It was a different story in the second half, though, which began with an uncharacteristic error by Katane keeper Genki Yamada that Kosuke Tanaka was just unable to punish as he lobbed over the bar. In the 64th minute, Fukushima did pull one back, Shoki Nagano smashing home Kota Mori's clever through ball. And 13 minutes later, Mori reduced the deficit further. catching Yuma Matsumoto in possession and sending in a 20-yard shot that Yamada somehow let squirm between his legs and over the line. The visitors tried for an equaliser, but Yamada stood firm. Final score, Toyama 3, Fukushima 2. Katane remain in contention. Fukushima's flimsy defensive display early on giving them too much to do. Away from the promotion race, FC Gifu had a straightforward home win over bottom side YSCC Yokohama. There were less than 2 minutes on the clock when Gifu took the lead, a surging run by Toma Murata taking him to the byline from where he centred for Junya Tanaka to finish. Tanaka got his second in only the 12th minute, Daisuke Kikuchi's chip into the box, falling to ex-YSCC striker Charles Unduka, whose blocked shot fell to Tanaka to steer in from 5 yards. Gifu keeper Kazushige Kirihata made a couple of top draw saves as the visitors fought to get back in the game, first from Kei Munetika's header and then from a dangerous shot by Yumemi Kanda. The home side made the point safe midway through the second half, Yosuke Kashiwagi's near post corner being headed on by Kohei Hattori and then swept in by Daisuke Kikuchi. Atsushi Kikutani hit the post with Kirihata beaten as YSCC pressed for a late consolation, but it ended Gifu 3, YSCC 0, the inconsistent home side producing one of their sporadic decent performances, kick-started by Tanaka's second and third league goals in a Gifu shirt. YSCC, as so often, looking good enough going forward, but undone by their fragility in defence. Tegevajaro Miyazaki made it back-to-back wins for the first time all season as they emerged victorious from the long trip to Vanrare Hachinohe. Centre-back Yudai Okuda was the unlikely hero for Miyazaki. He headed in Yudai Tokunaga's cross to give his side a 14th-minute lead. After barely threatening at all, Hachinohe drew level just before the break, Yuki Aida floating a high ball into the box for Ryusei Shimodo to head over Shunsuke Ueda and under the bar. Vanrare's Yusei Kayanoma had a goal ruled out for offside early in the second half, and Okuda got what turned out to be the winner for Tegevajaro with 18 minutes left, poking home a poorly defended set piece. Hachinohe pushed forward for an equaliser, but Miyazaki displayed some of the resilience that's been lacking in recent months to see out the win. Final score, Hachinohe 1, Miyazaki 2. A very disappointing result for Vanrare after they've beaten Matsumoto and Nagano in recent weeks. A massive boost for Tegevajaro and their coach Yasushi Takasaki, who sees his team consolidate in 11th. A late comeback for Gainare Tottori saw them grab a point at SC Sagamihara, where all the action took place in the second half. Tottori had been the better side, but nevertheless fell behind in the 54th minute when Jungo Fujimoto ran onto a through ball from Kensei Nakashima and steered it past Ken Tajiri, only for Junya Suzuki to deflect it into the net for an own goal. The home side appeared to be heading for their first victory since round 17 when they went 2-up with 14 minutes remaining, Kensei Ukita hitting the post from long range and the rebound falling kindly for Tsubasa Ando to knock past the stranded Tajiri. But Gainare were handed a lifeline almost immediately via a penalty awarded for a foul on substitute Meguru Odagaki by Yudai Fujiwara, Daichi Ishikawa converting past Kentaro Kakoi. And soon afterwards, Sagamihara completed a comprehensive shooting of themselves in the foot, Nakashima sliding in to bring down Koki Ishii and concede another spot kick, lashed home this time by Ryosuke Tamura. Final score, Sagami Hana 2, Tottori 2. The home side seemed to have lost forward Takumi Kato to injury once again, and otherwise have little going for them aside from Jungo Fujimoto. Gainane in their best form of the season, 10 points from the last 5 games, and they have a bit of backbone.
J-Talk Extra Time.
Only a pair of games on Sunday the 4th, but they both had the potential at least to impact on the battle for a top 2 finish. But after that incredible win at Kagoshima last week, FC Imabari were brought back down to earth by a shock home loss to Giramantz Kitakyushu. They even had the advantage of an early penalty scored high into the roof of the net by Tomoya Ando after Kazaki Nakagawa had been brought down by Yudai Nagano. But after that, not much went right for Imabari. Kitakyushu equalised in first half stoppage time when Nagano's free kick made its way through to the far post, where it bounced off the foot of home defender Wakaba Shimoguchi and ricocheted just over the line for an own goal. And 10 minutes after the restart, Giravance went in front. Yuki Nakayama's low cross flicked in at the near post by one of the forgotten men of J3, Yosuke Kamigata, previously the star of Hachinohe's front line, here netting his first goal in a Kitakyushu shirt. In fairness, Imabari did pull level soon afterwards, Taisei Takase lofting in a cross for Takafumi Yamada to volley past Yuki Kato, but with 11 minutes left, the visitors condemned their hosts to defeat. Substitute Takeaki Hanigaya, seeing game time for the first time since June, sent a free kick to the far post. Takashi Kawano headed powerfully across goal, and Yasufumi Nishimura crashed home a half volley. Final score, Imabari 2, Kitakyushu 3. Imabari's unbeaten run comes to an end at 10 games, and they slip back out of the top 4. Giramantz climb to 12th. And finally for round 23, promotion-chasing Fujiedam IFC dropped 2 vital points as they could only draw at Kamatamari Sanuki. It was the Noodle Boys who went in front on 21 minutes, Kohei Matsumoto picking up a loose ball, seeing his first shot blocked by MyFC's Takeshi Akiyama, but still having time to take a couple of paces, switch to his left foot and hammer a 20-yard shot inside the far post. Fujieda pulled level early in the second half when Akiyuki Yokoyama got on the end of a deflected through ball, advanced on homekeeper Kenta Watanabe and passed it into the net. Both teams had near misses as they pushed for another goal. Yokoyama just failing to guide it inside the post as he slid in to make contact with a Masahiko Sugita cross, while for Kamatamari, Masataka Nishimoto sent a powerful shot just wide in the closing stages. Final score, Sanuki 1, Fujieda 1. Another brighter performance from the home side, but they're still in the bottom 3. MyFC's room for error now is minimal. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 23, noting that Fujieda have 2 games in hand, Gifu and Numazu have 1. The top 6 teams are Iwaki with 51 points, Kagoshima and Matsumoto have 47, then it's Toyama with 42, Imabari 41, and in 6th with 39, Fujieda. At the other end of the table, the bottom 4 are in 15th, Sagami Hana with 20 points, Sanuki and Hachinohe both have 19, and bottom with 14, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the round 24 fixtures over the weekend when there are 6 games on Saturday the 10th of September. Every game's a big game now for Matsumoto, who travelled to Fukushima. Similarly, Toyama need 3 points from their home match with Miyazaki. There's a prefectural derby between Ehime and Imabari. Fujieda are at home to Hachinohe. Nagano make the trip to Gifu, and Tottori play host to Numazu. The other three matches are on Sunday the 11th, when leaders Iwaki heads down south to take on Kitakyushu. Nothing less than a victory will do for Kagoshima at home to Sanuki. And finally, another prefectural derby as YSCC meet Sagamihara. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.